Hello and welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. If this is the first episode of mine that you stumble upon and you enjoy it, please feel free to follow me wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're listening to this on YouTube, make sure to subscribe. I have been really bad at uploading in real time to my YouTube, but I'm catching up on my YouTube uploads, and I do anticipate this episode going live on YouTube the same day that it goes live everywhere else, and hopefully I can continue that pattern. This episode is going to be solely about Yellowjackets. I don't have any other shows that I want to talk about before I jump into episode 8. So it might be on the shorter side, but I don't have any other shows to talk about. The Bachelor ended. I'm kind of just like, I guess the only other show that I'm watching right now is White Lotus, but I don't know if I have anything intellectual to say about the White Lotus. I'm really liking this season. Quick mini rant. Timestamps will be in the description. So if you want to skip this part and just go straight to Yellowjackets, go ahead. But, like, I'm not somebody who particularly likes to travel. Like, traveling is not something that interests me. I have been very privileged to have gotten to travel a lot in my youth. And I will be honest, I did not always have the best experiences traveling just because it was, like, very stressful. And, like, I am somebody who really functions well with, like, a routine. But I will say, I'm glad that I am glad that I got to go places when I was younger, because now as an adult, I'm not saying, like, I'm sure if I really wanted to go somewhere, my parents, like, could still do some kind of family vacation. It's just like, I don't know. It was a lot easier when I was in school and I had, like, specific periods where I was off for, like, months where I could go somewhere. I have two cats now. So, like, even the idea of, like, traveling across the United States in any capacity that requires flying. Like, I don't want to fly at all. Like, there are too many complications. Like, I really would only want to go somewhere in driving distance. Why am I rambling? Anyways, all of this to say, I'm not somebody who really particularly wants to travel, but watching The White Lotus, I'm like, I do really want to go to Thailand now. It is making me nostalgic for Nepal. I went to Nepal and I loved it. Like, of all the places that I've been that I would really want to go back, I would love to go back to Nepal. I really would. Anyways, do I have any predictions for the finale, which will be coming out a week from yesterday? I'm recording this Monday night. It'll be out Wednesday, this podcast episode, but the White Lotus finale will be the following Sunday. So do I have any predictions? I fear that Chelsea's gonna die. She's my favorite character. Not just because I loved the actress, like, going into it. I really hope she lives. Besides that, I don't really have any predictions. And besides The White Lotus, I really can't think of another show that I've been watching. But anyways, so let me just jump straight into Yellowjackets. I went on a little spiel last episode about how I'm feeling about the progress of the season and how that plays into Lottie's death and the investigation around Lottie's death. And I'm not going to really focus on that much this episode. I'm just going to suspend disbelief and pretend that Lottie's not dead. Not that, like, I'm not in denial that she's dead. Unfortunately, her death doesn't feel super relevant to the plot, so I'm gonna not let that bother me and instead just talk about the plot anyways. Okay, also, disclaimer, if this is the first episode of mine that you're stumbling upon, I'm not doing scene-by-scene recaps. I'm saving that for the end of this season, where I'm going to do a deep dive where I do scene-by-scene recaps, and I track the whole narrative arc of the season, because I did that for seasons 1 and 2, and I feel like I enjoyed that format because I was able to pick up on things that were referenced earlier in the season that paid off later in the season. And I kind of want to do that for season 3, but I am just sharing my thoughts as the season progresses so I can kind of track my thoughts that way. But I want to be able to recap it with the whole season in mind. So I'll be doing that at the end. I'm just kind of jumping around and sharing my thoughts with the assumption that you've seen the episode. Anyways, but the episode opens with Shauna having, like, some kind of daydream. She's like a cashier. I really liked this. I did. I love when Jackie makes an appearance. This scene felt really, really important within the context of the entire episode. The title of it being A Normal, Boring Life. Everything that happens with Melissa. Like, it felt really, really important. And there's definitely like a lot to dive into. The fact that Jackie calls her shipman and she's like, I never liked that. The way that Shauna's scanning meat and it's like human, like it's really, really interesting. And I think a fascinating representation of how Ty later in this episode says that this place will follow them for the rest of their lives. And I really liked this image of Shauna living a quote unquote quote normal boring life, just going back to like she's a grocery store clerk, right? That's like the epitome of just like a monotonous life. I mean, no offense to people who work at grocery stores, but it's like normal, it's boring, right? That's what it's meant to represent. But even in this normal boring situation that Shauna's in, things she's checking out are human body parts, her past. It really encapsulates what Ty says in this episode, that this will follow them for the rest of their lives. And I thought that was really important because of the whole way Melissa talks about her life versus Shauna's life. And I'll get into that because I have a lot to say about adult Melissa and Shauna, because Melissa's alive, duh. Anybody who like took them at their word that Melissa was dead, I didn't believe it at all. Anyways, I wanted to touch on that briefly because it kind of wasn't really in either timeline, because it was like teen Shauna, but then adult Shauna wakes up from it. So, but it also interestingly connects to something that teen Shauna sees later. So I just wanted to talk about that up top. And then I'm gonna do the adult timeline, and then I'll end with the teen timeline. The first thing I want to talk about in the adult timeline, because I'm going to kind of go through different dynamics. Again, I'm not going in chronological order of the episode. The first dynamic plot line, whatever, of the episode that I want to talk about is the Jeff and Callie dynamic at the hotel. They're still at the hotel. Shauna's off doing God knows what, but they're at the hotel. They see the Joels. The Joels are there. The Joels are the people who Jeff was trying to impress in episode 2. And Shauna, like, quote unquote, blew that dinner for them. We see Misty call Jeff. Jeff's now worried about where Shauna is. I have to say, I like Jeff sometimes. I do. I find him to be an interesting character. I find the fact that Shauna married Jackie's ex, who she was hooking up with, who she was having an affair with and had a child with, very, very interesting. I do. I really do. I think Jeff and Shauna's relationship was the catalyst of so much in the wilderness that I think he's an important, interesting character. I have nothing against Jeff. But there was a bit too much Jeff in this episode for me in a way that pissed me off. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to the people who like Jeff, but there was just a bit too much of Jeff. We didn't need to see, like, they could have cut that whole, in my opinion, that whole scene where him and Callie are like having breakfast. Like, that was irrelevant. We could have just seen him getting the call. He sees the Joels later and has a conversation with them. Like, maybe he could have seen the Joels. He can't have a conversation with them because he gets a call for Misty. Like, there were too many things. It dragged on. It pissed me off. Sorry. That's my opinion. At some point, they're in the hotel room. And first of all, Jeff has scratches on his hand, which I think is interesting because it's like, there was DNA under Lottie's fingernails. It was Shauna's DNA. So maybe, obviously, those two can't be connected. But if it's Callie's, if it was like a partial, I guess that wouldn't make sense if Jeff had the scratches. I was like, maybe if the DNA was actually Callie's and it showed up as a match somehow, but then why would Jeff have the scratches? I lost my train of thought. I was trying to say maybe there's a way. Or Walter could have just been lying, or the scratches can be completely unrelated. But why does Jeff have scratches on his hand? I noted that in case that comes up later, but I don't really know how relevant it's going to be. I cannot get into my frustrations about Lottie's storyline because that's not super relevant to this episode, and I do not need to go on and on and on about how upset I am about the direction they took Lottie. I really don't have to do that again. In terms of the Jeff and Callie section, they're in the hotel room. Callie says she doesn't think anybody's actually after Mom. Jeff agrees, and he's like, okay, we're checking out. As they're checking out, he sees the Joels, and he gives this big speech to the Joels about how his wife is crazy, and she blew the meeting, and he's the right person for the job. And a lot of people had a lot of interpretations about what this speech meant. Like, people were like, finally, Jeff realizes Shauna's crazy. My reading of this scene is, because I think if it was written to be, oh, Jeff finally realized Shauna's crazy, I feel like that's kind of bad writing, because respectfully, wouldn't you know that something's wrong with her? If that feels like a kind of late revelation on Jeff's part, if now is when he's realizing. That's not the way I read it. The way I read it was, I do think Jeff understands who Shauna is. I think sometimes he doesn't want to face it, but I don't think Jeff just doesn't know that Shauna's crazy. Or I don't like the term crazy, but like, I don't think Jeff doesn't understand that Shauna is capable of a lot of bad, scary things, that she has like a lot of trauma. I don't think it was that realization. I think Jeff has spent the majority of this season following Shauna's orders and like being, they're supposedly in danger, which is why Jeff and Kelly are being kept in the hotel. But Shauna's off doing God knows what. She she left Misty. Jeff doesn't know where Shauna is. I think it was a moment of frustration where he's like, fuck it, I'm not gonna let Shauna's shit sway the way things go. I think that was Jeff being like, I need this for me. Like, in that moment, I think he was upset at Shauna and he was like, I'm gonna do this for me. I'm not gonna consider Shauna in this moment because I don't feel like she considers me. That's the way I read it. I didn't read it as like Jeff actually has like an aha moment, because that wouldn't make sense to me. I guess maybe there's like a way where you understand that somebody is capable of a lot of bad things and you know they've done really horrible things, but maybe you didn't know how bad it was. I don't know. I did see somebody say, and I thought this was an interesting tidbit, that Jeff was kind of the catalyst of Shauna devolving again because of the blackmail. And I do think that's interesting. I feel like that's easy for us to say because we don't know much about what happened in the 25 years. But there is, as somebody who watched a lot of Criminal Minds, a lot of the times there is like some kind of trigger, some kind of turning point that causes a serial killer. Not that Shauna Shipman is necessarily like a serial killer in the way that, like, I mean, they could probably profile her. That would have been a really interesting Criminal Minds episode. You know what other show I think would have been so interesting as a crossover? Bones. I've been watching Bones a lot, rewatching Bones a lot, because I've seen all of it like years and years and years ago. And I'm just constantly like, when I'm watching Yellow Jackets, I'm thinking like, Temperance Brennan would have been able to figure out these people were eaten. Like, she would have been able to figure out their cause of deaths. But anyways, like, there is a turning point for serial killers, or like that causes them to devolve. And it wouldn't be surprising for me if there was a turning point for Shauna and the blackmail started it. But an interesting aspect is the blackmail didn't start with Adam Martin. Like, she connected the two later, but she wasn't being blackmailed at first because Jeff was trying to get money from Natalie and Thaisa. Like, it wasn't directed to her until the others were like, you didn't get this postcard, and she connected it to Adam Martin. And while the Adam Martin, his death was obviously after she thought she was being blackmailed and she thought it was him and everything, like, I do wonder, I feel like that is a bit too simplistic in terms of characterizing Shauna, because she was already kind of devolving and like destructive in certain ways, very different ways, obviously. But also, I feel like you could argue that part of it wasn't just, there was a reporter who wasn't actually a reporter. She was like hired by Thaisa, but like they didn't know that. That kind of brought things up again. It was a 25 year anniversary. Like, I don't think it's so simple, but I really, this speech bothered me from Jeff, because it's like, and you know what? It reminds me of a similar speech, or not speech, but like perspective that teen Melissa has, which I'll get into, which is just kind of like, maybe it's easier said or whatever, but like how do you get into a relationship with Shauna and you don't see all of her? And you also like seem to claim that you do. Like, you claim you love Shauna and you see her for all she is. But then, like, I don't know, part of me feels kind of bad for Shauna. Like, does she do a lot of bad things? Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. Like, what do you mean Melissa's like, I like that you're not afraid of all of the bad parts of you, and then Shauna abandons her and I don't know. Like, what do you mean, Jeff? And I guess people have breaking points, but it's just, it bothered me a little bit. It did. I'm not gonna lie. I didn't like this moment. Okay, because I think the issue for me is I think a lot of people watch the show and they like the men and they like the quote unquote sane, rational characters. And the reason people like the speech of Jeff's is not because they're like, oh, Shauna, like it's not, in my opinion, as complex and like nuanced of them being like, Jeff is just tired of the, like Shauna's not treating him well, Jeff's tired of the way, it's more than that. It's the way people talk about it is like, Jeff finally realized that Shauna's crazy. It's like, can we have a little bit of perspective? And also, if you genuinely, you like Jeff and to you, it's like, oh, he finally realized she was crazy. It's like, wouldn't you be like, that's a little bit stupid on Jeff's part if he knew everything about Shauna? And finally, like, I don't know. Anyways, I hope Jeff dies soon. The next dynamic I'm going to talk about is Ty and Van. Misty's there too, but it's really mostly about Ty and Van. Ty finds out that Van needs palliative care at this point. Like, she's not going to make it much longer. And now she wants to extend Van's life by servicing it. So she asks Misty to take her to the palliative care unit. She like is about to like suffocate a man and then he just dies naturally. And she's like, does that count? Crazy, crazy work. Meanwhile, at the hospital, Misty is like trying to reach Jeff to be like, where's Shauna? I have a lot to say about Ty and Van. I think the saddest part for me, and we see it later, is the fact that other Ty is taking over so often, that Ty herself, the real Ty or whatever, isn't getting those moments with Van. And I've been feeling this, like I've been like, I feel really bad for Ty that she's like, Van's dying and she's not getting that time with her. And we see in this episode, other Ty locks Ty out and Ty's like, please, I need to see her. And other Ty's like, you never believed, I'm the one who can save her. It really gives me chills to think about because it's like, I'm not even a particularly like big fan of Van to the point where like if Van dies, I'm going to be really sad. I think especially because Van has cancer. So part of me is like, Van's going to die. Probably I like the thing is like Lottie's death felt kind of like sudden and out of nowhere and I wasn't anticipating it. Van's death, when and if it comes, even if it's not the cancer, I feel like they've been building up to it a little bit in a way that doesn't, when it happens, similar to like Coach Ben, I knew Coach Ben was gonna die. His death still hit me. I've felt like Van was gonna die, but as it gets closer and closer, it does make me especially sad for Ty because of the way everything's happening and the fact that Ty isn't truly getting to spend that time with Van. Will other Ty be successful in extending Van's life? I don't know. I think if there's one thing we've noticed about it, quote unquote, the wilderness, is even when it saves somebody's life, it very often doesn't do it for long. You know, the people we've seen, I mean, so far it's only been Natalie was marked for death. And while she didn't die in the wilderness, she did eventually die. Like, it does not seem being chosen or being saved is necessarily, sometimes it's just a slower death. Like, do I think, I just don't see a path for Van. It does seem, though, interestingly enough, that from the stills for the next episode, Van is not in the hospital. Like, Van gets out of the hospital. So will this, like, sacrifice-ish that Thaisa made by, like, not even killing this man, but being there when he died, like, will that save Van or give her more time? I don't know. It's also interesting because even like that waiter died and then the cancer started getting better and then I don't know. Okay, now to the main event of the adult timeline for this episode, because boy, do I have a lot to say about Shauna and Melissa. So Shauna's at Alex's house, which is Hannah's daughter. She breaks in. She sees that Melissa is Alex's wife. Although Alex calls her Kelly. They have a daughter. Alex and their daughter leave and it's just Melissa, aka Kelly. And she can tell that Shauna's hiding in a closet and she's like, you don't know whose house you just walked into. And she's like, actually, Melissa, I do. And I thought you were dead. Apparently, okay, this really pissed me off. Apparently, she like faked her death and she says that if you leave a note, the cops like don't investigate. That doesn't make any fucking sense. If there's no body, I guess we would have to have more details. Like, was there a lot of blood to the point where the amount of blood would indicate that somebody died and the body was just moved. Because if you just left a note and you kind of disappeared, then... But also, that doesn't make any sense. Because if it's suicide, how would you move the body? Like, if you're dead, you can't move yourself from where you died. So if there's no body for suicide, does that not indicate some kind of foul play? Like, either she's just a missing person. Because I was thinking, oh, if there's like a lot of blood and their body's not there, but then that would indicate foul play and murder. Like, how, what do you mean? Like, there has to be something else to the story, some kind of cover up, because it doesn't make any sense that you just leave a note and then they're like, oh yeah, she's dead. Bodies don't disappear when it comes to suicides. I guess maybe if there was some kind of like, I'm going to drown myself in the river. But no, because your body would turn up in the river. That doesn't make any sense. It really pissed me off. What do you mean, oh, I just left a note and they assumed that I killed myself? That's not how that works. Your body's not there. How would it be a suicide? Dead people can't move their bodies. And if somebody else moves your body, then you either had, like, what? Okay. It's fine.
Sorry if there's a change in audio at all. I'm recording this the next day. I was recording it, like, late Monday night because I get out of work late. And I was just too sleepy. Like, I wasn't making any sense because I was just, like, really, really tired. So I went to bed. I'm recording this the next morning. I don't know if I'll finish this before I have to clock into work. But if not, I'll finish it after, like, the recording, and then I'll edit it tonight. My goal is to have this up early Wednesday. So anyways, I was talking about Melissa and Shauna, and I had a lot to say about this because, honestly, Melissa pissed me off. Melissa faked her death, tracked down the daughter of a woman they killed. She says that at first it was just her checking up on her to make sure everything was okay. And then... she fell in love with her. That's weird. That's weird to me. When did she start looking for her again? Like, how old was she? She's obviously younger. So how much younger was she? How young was she when she started looking for her? Was it like years after? Was it after she faked her death? Also, when did she fake her death? We didn't get context of that. Like, was it, like, did she fake her death pretty soon after they got back? Did she fake her death? Well, I don't know, because they have a daughter, so it would have had to be, like, a good amount of time. It just bothered me. A lot of Shauna haters were like, yes, Melissa read her to filth. And talking about, like, how she has a normal, boring life. At some point, she's like, Shauna, is somebody actually coming after you? Or are all these things just, like, easily explained? And, like, the thing that bothered me about Melissa is you don't have a normal life. It is subjectively weird, at a minimum, that you tracked down the daughter of a woman you guys killed and, like, fell in love with her. She doesn't know who you are. You have, like, you first learned of this girl by talking to her mother when she was a child. I mean, you were a child too, but you were, like, about to be an adult. Like, what do you mean? It's all very weird to me. It's all very, very weird to me. Like, she doesn't know who you are. You got into this relationship. Like, you first learned of this woman. You tracked her down because you felt bad about killing her mom. That is not normal. That's not normal at all. I'm sorry. You are not normal. And it bothers me. Like, I think, like, I loved Adult Nat because Nat was like, you guys are just as crazy as I am. You're just better at, like, hiding it. And it's like that Melissa is, like, so self-righteous and acting like she is, like, normal and healthy and the rest of them aren't, in a way that really pissed me off because it's objectively not true. It's not like you faked your own death and completely disconnected from anything. You got rid of any connection. You got rid of the tape years ago by, like, destroying it, not by sending it to Shauna. Like, you're not normal. You're not. But anyways, Shauna and Melissa have a conversation, both holding knives, they're sitting at a table across from each other, each with a knife in case somebody tries something. Shauna's like, why would you send me the tape? And she's like, I needed to let it go. It was bothering me. And Shauna's like, that's bullshit. You've been torturing me for weeks. Like, the freezer, the car breaks, the phone in the bathroom, all of these things, right? And I agree with Shauna. Even if it's not connected, like, Melissa had nothing to do with the bathroom, the car, like, all of those things are genuinely coincidences. Sending the tape within itself, she's like, I explained it all in the note. I'm sorry, no note
That's stupid. If you want to be disconnected, if you never want to speak to them again, then why connect with them again? Why send that tape to Shauna's house? It doesn't make any sense to me. Also, she was keeping tabs on them. Like, she was keeping tabs on the fact that they went to Lottie's compound, and, like, I don't buy any of Melissa's. I don't buy it. I don't buy that she's living this normal life. Even if she was in denial and she genuinely in her day-to-day was like, I'm living a normal life. Like, I love my wife. I love my family. And she wasn't thinking about the wider implications of the fact that the woman she married is the daughter of a woman they killed. Even then, sending the tape, I'm not your therapist, girl. But, like, I would say that marrying the daughter of a woman you killed is really not the best way to try to move past things that you're not proud of, or the trauma or whatever of the wilderness. You're actively lying about who you are, and in a very real way still connected to something of your past. If you faked your death and you just, like, started over and nobody knew anything about you and you were no longer Melissa and in no way were you connected to anything of the wilderness, maybe I could buy that you're living a normal life and that's why you disconnected and that was the goal. But you quite literally were keeping tabs on the daughter of a woman you killed. Sorry, I'll stop saying it like that. But, like, you were actively keeping track, like, keeping tabs on Alex. Then you fell in love with her. You're not even going by your real name. Your day-to-day life is living a lie, and it's also very intertwined with your past. Just because you're lying about who you are doesn't mean you're not still affected by the past in the way that Shauna and the rest of the women are. They're just not lying about it. But anyways, when Shauna says that Melissa's been making her, like, coming for her for weeks, making her feel crazy, and then later Melissa's like, did somebody cut your brakes or do you just drive an old car? Did somebody lock you in a freezer, or freezer doors just heavy and closed if you don't prop them open? It really felt like, if you've ever watched or listened to the musical Bring It On, the song Something Isn't Right Here, when she's like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, somehow she ended up as a captain. Like, how she said, like, and they're all like, girl, none of that's happened. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, what, she gave me mono? She got you transferred schools? Like, none of it makes sense. How could it be on her? And then later in the musical, there's a song from the girl, and she planned it all. That's what it was giving to me. When Melissa's like, did somebody really cut your brakes? I'm like, it's giving the, I'm not a singer, but it's like, so it's her fault I got mono, and for Skylar failing too, and she somehow got you transferred, and this whole thing's about you. Like, that part of the song, Something Isn't Right Here, like, that's what it was giving to me. And, you know, Campbell was not wrong, so maybe Shauna isn't wrong. Also, Melissa says, like, Shauna mentions that Lottie's dead. Melissa acts like she doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about. She's like, Lottie's dead too? I don't buy it. Again, if Lottie's death isn't connected to this whole tape Melissa thing, then what was the point of it? Like, I feel like at the end it's going to be like, Callie killed Lottie. That feels lame to me. I don't know. I'm open to the idea of Callie killing somebody, but I think if Callie killed somebody narratively, it would have been more interesting if she killed Jeff. Because of that comment that Shauna makes in the pilot when she's hooking up with Jeff, where it's like, if you get me pregnant, I'll raise the child to be a killing machine and hunt you down. Like, I think Jeff dying at the hands of Callie would be such an interesting way to connect the two. So I don't know. That's what I would want. I don't want Callie killing Lottie. It doesn't make sense. What would her motivation be? Like, I don't know. I don't need to go on my spiel again, but... And if Melissa did kill Lottie, I mean, I already hated her. Like, the thing is, I didn't like Melissa in the teen timeline. And Melissa in the adult timeline, for all the reasons a lot of people loved her, pissed me off more. Because it's like, what do you mean you're living a very bizarre, odd life, but you're on a high horse of, like, how normal you are and how you can move past the wilderness? You haven't moved past the wilderness. Your whole life is intertwined with the guilt of what you did to Alex's mother, your wife's mother. What the fuck does that even, like, you are not moving past it. You're not. And I don't like this weird, like, Sean is crazy thing. It also, like, the thing is, and I'll talk about this more when I talk about the teen timeline and Shauna and Melissa in the teen timeline, but Melissa, I don't understand her. I don't understand her character. And honestly, for me, it feels like it's, like, underdeveloped. But, like, what do you mean? And I guess it's, like, Jeff, too. It's, like, you know somebody is capable of a lot of things. But, like, there's like, a limit and a turning point. I just, like, I don't get, like, Melissa in the teen timeline saw Shauna beat Lottie to a bloody pulp. Right? But, like, Shauna doesn't stay to comfort her when she gets shot by an arrow. And that, to Melissa, is, like, you don't care about me. Like, you saw her capable of violence. And you, like, went up to her and you were, like, I like that you've, like, this version of you that you've become. Like, I don't know. The only way it would be compelling to me is if genuinely Melissa, like, did it all as a way to protect herself in the wilderness. And she was, like, that smart and thought out. Like, that would make sense to me. The weird turn makes no sense to me. Maybe I don't get it because I've never, like, been in a romantic relationship. And it's, like, different when you see somebody hurt other people versus you. But it's just, like, I don't understand how you can, like, know somebody's damaged, know they're capable of a lot of things. And then, like, that, I guess, you know, in a moment that you really need them, that feels like a bigger betrayal than, like, I guess I could get that, but it's just, like, I don't understand the shift. And I really just didn't like this from Melissa. I saw some people being, like, it would have been so interesting if it was Mari because of the way the episode ends with Shauna biting Melissa's arm. And we saw Shauna bite Mari in the beginning of the season. And I do agree. And I also think another reason it would be really compelling is because Mari and Shauna already had, like, a level of animosity towards each other, where if they did get together and it was, like, this rage-filled, violent thing where Shauna kind of molded Mari into what she needed the way she did for Melissa, and the going back to, like, that baseline of animosity would make even more sense than for Melissa, who we just saw being, like, really into Shauna and really fine with Shauna's bad parts until it turned on her. It would be way more interesting if, like, Mari, in my opinion, had gotten swept up in the moment and, like, there had been a chemistry moment where she was like, oh, I actually kind of like Shauna. And then it went back to that baseline of animosity and, like, Shauna thinking, or Mari thinking Shauna's crazy. And then it would hit even harder in the adult timeline because it's like, yeah, Mari already had that baseline of, like, fuck Shauna, you know? And all of that tension in the early season between Mari and Shauna would hit even harder in the adult timeline. And it would read so much, it would make way more sense if somebody with a baseline of animosity or judgment towards Shauna, like Mari, were to say this than Melissa, who to me feels like you were just going along with Shauna the entire time. You, like, you were fine with her hitting, like, beating up other people, but the moment she leaves you, that's, like, a turning point, and suddenly she's crazy. I thought you liked her because she was crazy. It doesn't make any sense to me. That's just my opinion. I really don't like Melissa. I feel like we're not going to have any other adult survivors, and now it's just all white people left, basically. And Ty. It's just white people and Ty, who I love. I love Ty, but, like, she's the only one left. I feel so bad for her. Like, if they don't bring in another survivor, and they don't bring in, like, Akila or Amari or, like, another person of color, them killing Lottie off is really going to piss me off. And I know, like, some people are going to be like, why does it matter? But it's just, like, the thing is, if Melissa wasn't a white character and it was still, like, the way she is, it would still bother me because we have more fleshed out characters. But it's especially annoying when it's, like, it feels like we removed some form of representation and now we have, like, I don't know. Melissa bothers me. I'm not gonna lie. The whole thing bothers me. Anyways, I just started rambling and I lost my train of thought in my notes. Is there anything that I didn't say? Okay, also, after she gives her little speech, she, like, she gets up to get water and she says that, she's like, what did you come here to do, kill me? She's like, I think you came here because you want your life to explode. And that feels like projection. Why would you send Shauna the tape if you don't want your life to explode? That does not feel like that is, like, I don't think Shauna wants her life to explode because she came. You clearly don't understand Shauna. Shauna is very, I don't know if revenge is the right word, but Shauna is very much, like, defensive. Like, she will come at you if she feels like you're attacking her. And so I don't understand how you sending Shauna the tape isn't you wanting your life to explode, you wanting her to come back into your life. Like, either Melissa is deeply stupid, or there's, like, a wider, deeper plan where she knew this would happen, and that would be compelling to me. If Melissa's just genuinely stupid, and she was being completely sincere in this episode about, like, needing to let it go because it was bothering her and, like, she lives a normal life, that would be really stupid to me and really annoying, and I would hate her even more. If this was, like, some kind of act, and there was, like a more thought out plan, and it was like some kind of Machiavellian, like, I knew you would come back and like whatever, then maybe I would find Melissa's character a little bit more interesting, because then it could also maybe imply that the whole getting close to Sean in the wilderness at first was just a thought out way to survive, which if that is the direction they're taking Melissa's character, I will find that a little bit more interesting than the I'm living a normal life, you're crazy way that she's coming across right now, because to me that just makes her even more insufferable. I'm so sorry. I would like to say I have nothing against Hilary Swank or Jenna, who plays the young Melissa. Like, when I'm criticizing Melissa, like, I'm really not criticizing like the performance or the acting, and I'm happy for her that she got an adult counterpart and she got a bigger role this season. Like, genuinely, I have nothing against her. It's just when you have an ensemble show with such short seasons, there's very limited time to tell people stories, and when you're removing a character's adult counterpart and then you're bringing in another adult character's counterpart, it feels very much like the time that is spent on Hilary Swank and spent on adult Melissa and that dynamic with Shauna, we could have gotten an interesting storyline for Lottie. And again, like, I can accept a character dying if it feels purposeful and it moves the plot along. Like, right now it feels like Lottie just died for shock value, and the investigation about her death has, like, barely moved forward, and we've barely got, like, I don't know. I read the book Turtles All the Way Down, and it really bothered me because the little, not the book itself, but the little sleeve made it sound like it was, like, a murder mystery where, like, a rich guy went missing, and she was trying to find out who, like, what happened to him. But it was really just about her relationship to the millionaire's son, and then at the end they find out what happened to the guy. That's the way Lottie's death feels right now, where it's like Lottie died, and a bunch of other things are happening, and then at the end, we're just gonna magically find out what happened to her in a way that I just, like, even when Travis died at the beginning of season one, his whole death was, like, the driving force for the majority of that season. All the scenes of Misty and Nat were about that, like, all of that, it was connected. And then season one ended on the cliffhanger of, like, Lottie taking Natalie, so it's implied that Lottie had something to do with Travis. Like, and at first it's like, oh, is it connected to the blackmail? And then it's not, Travis dying and everything. So it's like, that just doesn't feel like what we've gotten for Lottie's death. And maybe it's because it happened in episode 4, but there have been so many episodes where that's, like, barely mentioned, and it just doesn't feel like it's important to the plot. It feels like they killed her for shock value, and there's not going to be... I don't need to keep going on this tangent, but it is just bothering me because I feel like they could have done this storyline with Shauna in a much... Like, there are people... Like, I saw people be like, it wouldn't make sense if it was, like, Mari. But I think there's a very interesting way where they could have made it make sense with Mari. Mari leaves, she comes back, and when she comes back after the Coach Ben thing, she, like, brings them back to where Coach Ben is, and she's not, like, still, there's not still an animosity with Shauna. They could have had some kind of tender moment between Mari and Shauna where they do, like, have a moment and they kiss and it becomes this thing, and Mari takes the role that Melissa took. Like, there would have been an interesting way to do it. And then again, for the ending of, like, the realization that person has about, like, Shauna doesn't actually care about me when they're abandoned would be even more powerful if it was with Mari, because it was like Mari gave Shauna a chance and then it didn't work out. Like, I don't know. That's just my opinion. I think they could have done it in an interesting way with a character we knew more about. And I think Mari would have been a great one because of the parallel of, like, their fight at the beginning of the season. If there had been a shift where they were in a little relationship for a little bit and then it went back to, like, tense, then adult Mari coming back to haunt Shauna and saying all these things of like, Shauna, nothing's going on in your life would be even more powerful. I guess the only way it would make sense to me is if there's like a wider thought out revenge plot that Melissa's actually doing, but she's lying about it. Then I do think maybe the Mari, the way I'm describing the plot, wouldn't make a ton of sense. So I'll see where Hilary Swank, adult Melissa, goes. I'm still not super happy about it. But anyways, as I was saying, she gets up to get her water. She's like, you want your life to explode. And then she comes back. She puts the water on the table. Shauna grabs her hand. There's a struggle. Eventually, Shauna pins Melissa to the floor, takes a bite of her arm, removes the skin from her mouth, and tells Melissa to eat it or she will tell her family who she really is. And that's where the episode ends. Now, I'm going to talk about the teen timeline, but like, that was crazy. That was really crazy. I liked it. I'm excited to see as many critiques as I've had. I'm excited to see like where this picks up. Does she eat the flesh? Does she get away? If she does, how does she get away? How does everything happen? I'm very interested to see on like just the way it happens, how the rest of them get to her. I don't really know. I do think I'll see how it happens, but I try to keep an open mind. I really do. And there are moments that I like about it. I just think that there's a lot of, sometimes in my opinion, like people being like, guys, it wouldn't have made sense narratively if they did this with Mari. And I think that's not giving the writers enough credit. Like there is an interesting, compelling way they could have made it with a character who had already a storyline and a plot and like something. And like, I think it would have been more compelling if it was Mari. Again, I guess it depends where they're taking the adult counterpart's character, but it's like, I don't think it needed to be somebody we knew nothing about. Because to me, that really screams that it's a plot device for Shauna. And I don't think that's fair to the character. I don't. Like, I don't like Melissa, not because of anything about her. I don't like her because she's not like a fully fleshed out character. She's simply a plot device for Shauna. And I don't like that. I feel like that is a frustrating use of time in a narrative when there are so many interesting characters. I feel like you can write interesting stories for interesting characters instead of using blank slates of characters to move the story along. You could have written an interesting story for Shauna of like a wilderness girlfriend for her that wasn't with a character who was a blank slate, in my opinion. Like, the fact that they literally said, like, we wanted to choose her because she was a blank enough slate, that is frustrating to me. Like, you could have written an interesting arc for somebody that wasn't a blank slate. You didn't need to have it. You could have made it a compelling shift where suddenly, like, I don't know. That's annoying to me. But let me move on. So in the teen timeline, Misty, I said this in my last episode, she like fell and she lost her glasses and we never saw her again. I figured she found them, but no, we see Misty in the teen timeline the next morning, lost in the woods. She still hasn't found her glasses. Like she was there all night. But anyway, she eventually does find her glasses. Thank God, poor Misty was just left there in the wilderness. I mean, it's not like they knew that she lost her glasses, but I guess they weren't looking for her. But also like, a lot of them, it's not like they were all at camp and Misty was the only one missing. Akilah and Travis were also gone. It's like everybody but Akilah, Travis, and Misty are at the camp interrogating Hannah. But I felt so bad for Misty. I was like, we picked up and I was like, oh my God, she hasn't found her glasses. Anyway, she does find them and then she starts heading back to camp. Okay, so Akilah, Travis, and Cody, this was a very interesting dynamic. So we saw at the end of, or not the end, but we saw in the last episode, Travis getting Cody off of like being like, take us home, helping him up the cliff. Him and Akilah are walking with Cody and he's like guiding them back home. And Akilah's like, this doesn't feel right. Like, this doesn't feel right. What are we doing? And Ben was supposed to be your bridge home. Like, we're just leaving all of them. That doesn't make any sense. And Travis is like, none of this is real. You're not a prophet. I didn't choose you because I saw something. Let's get home and then we can send back rescue. Like, we need to get home. Akilah is really not down for this. So she starts leaving thread behind. And Misty, we see Misty find the thread. In my mind, this is when Citizen Detective Misty Quigley was born. She was like, let me track down the... She found the clues. I liked this connection. I like as the the teen timeline progresses, we see them get closer and closer to their adult counterparts, like personality-wise and like certain traits. And I really like this little detail of it feels like Misty finding the clues in a way that's very, very true to her adult counterpart. We see them interrogating Hannah, and I really love that Dan was like, did Mulder and Scully get together? Because that's so me if I was lost in the Canadian wilderness. They get really upset about the fact that nobody found them, or nobody's still looking for them. Like, she's like, who are you? Also, an interesting detail, at some point, she turns to Shauna and says, are you, like, the captain of the team? Because they tell her that they're a soccer team that went missing. And she's like, oh, yeah, I saw that on the news. They looked for months. But, like, at some point, she says to Shauna, are you the captain of the team? And Natalie's like, she's not the captain. And Shauna's like, neither are you. And then Nat's like, yeah, because she's fucking dead. And I loved this moment. I loved the way that Natalie has been, like, dethroned. But, like, as soon as there's, like, a moment for rescue, she's, like, very, very rescue-minded. And, like, she's taking charge. It doesn't matter that she was dethroned and she's not in charge anymore. She's like, can you get us back? She's like, and Hannah's like, not by myself. Then Misty comes in and they're like, I found Aquila, Travis, and the other guy. And then Hannah's like, Cody, he's our guide. And so they go to get him, because he can take them back. Hannah doesn't know the way. I loved this scene of, like, we see Travis, Aquila, and Cody. Aquila is, like, tying her shoes, very much, like, delaying things. And then eventually she, like, puts the gun up and she's like, don't move. And the rest of them come out from the bushes. This was, like, I loved the way it looked. It was really, really pretty. Pretty isn't the right word, but it was very satisfying the way they shot this, of, like, the group coming out from the bushes. And, like, the different angles they showed that in. I liked the fact that Travis seems kind of hesitant. But then Natalie is like, come with us. He immediately just, like, locks in. And he's like, I'm not going to go against the group. And tells Cody to come with them. Back at the camp, they, like, question them why they were, like, going by themselves. And Travis is like, Aquila didn't feel right about it. But I, like, thought... And then Aquila, like, covers for him and is like, he thought it would be better if it was, like, a smaller group. It'd be easier and faster to get us to rescue. Like, we were going to send people back. She, like, doesn't say that Travis wanted to just do it alone. I like the Aquila and Travis dynamic. I really do. Natalie is very much, like, leading and taking charge and telling them what to do. And Shauna is taking issue with it. She does not like it. She's like, you're not in charge anymore. And Natalie's like, this will get us home. Like, we're going back. And Lottie's like, we can't go back. And Natalie's like, why not? And she's like, don't listen to her. Everybody pack. It'll take us 6 days. Pack enough for 6 days. Let's do this. We're getting out of here. I love this from Nat. I really did. I think Nat is a great leader that they have. I also think, like, I think Nat was probably the best leader. Because Lottie, I feel like, kind of was pushed into the leadership role very, and it was very much connected to her illness and these visions that she didn't have, like, a firm grasp on. Like, she didn't really have, like, a solid foot in reality and, like, what was real and what did this mean. And, like, Lottie was losing touch with reality at the same time she was gaining power in a way that I don't think made for a particularly firm, logical, cohesive leadership. Like, I think she was just trying to be, like, this is how, like, based on how you feel, like, embrace how you feel, pay attention to your surroundings. Like, but I don't think it was, like, thought out, right? Shauna is very much a leader who's, like, she likes having power and she likes, like, Natalie is the best leader they've had because I do genuinely think she wanted to lead them in a way that would help them all. Like, I don't. They were doing really well when Natalie was the leader. Coach Ben ruined it all. No, I'm kidding. Sorry. I like the fact that they still listen to Natalie, even though Shauna's in charge. Like, I think there's a really interesting shift that happens with a lot of them as soon as the potential of going home is in reach. That it's, like, all of the norms of the structure, the dynamics out here, they don't matter. We're going home. And then there are people who are, like, the dynamics out here feel safer to me, which I'll get into. But that's really interesting to me, the way that a lot of them, like, Mari was very group, like, follower-minded. But as soon as there's an opportunity to go home, like, that is all they can think about. Same with, like, Melissa. I also, I think Melissa being shot with the arrow and Shauna's reaction after was a huge factor in everything. But I think even beyond that, I think going home kind of removes the veil. It lifts this idea of like we're going, of like the power dynamics out there no longer matter, because it's like, well, we're going home. Like, who cares? Sean is in power, Natalie's in power, whoever wants to get us home. It's really interesting. Anyways.
I am once again sorry if the audio changed at all. I'm recording this a few hours later. I recorded the beginning last night, then I tried to record before work. I didn't finish talking before work, so now I'm recording after work. Apologies for all the complications. But where I last left off, I think I was talking about Natalie being in charge and kind of the dynamic shifting, and how, I guess what I wanted to say, what I was trying to say, and I don't know if it came across well, I'll fix this in editing, but I think it's really interesting. Like, Yellow Jackets is a really interesting, like, obviously when you exist in society, there are certain standards and expectations that we have in our different communities, you know, different countries have different cultures. And it's just interesting the way that those hierarchies and those lines kind of disappear for some people as soon as the idea of going back home to the real world show up, you know, if that makes sense. And I think the people who decide they don't want to stay, or the people who decide they don't want to go, are the ones who, not all of them, because obviously all of them are going to deal with their own things. But I just think it's interesting how the people who want to stay, a large reason is because there's going to be some kind of like, I don't know, I think it's an interesting representation of the way that like marginalization and your role in society and the place you fall in the social hierarchy, like, impacts how badly you want to be part of the society and how much you'd want to go back to, like, the stability and the comfort of that life if it's, I don't know, I'll get more into it as I talk about the individual people, but I just think the people who want to stay, it's really interesting. I really don't understand, and I try not to watch thinking about, like, all the people's discourse around it, because I've found that a lot of my frustrations come from me just, like, fundamentally watching the show differently than the people whose takes bother me. Like, the people who really talk about, like, people be, like, the characters being bad people and evil and all of those things. Like, those takes piss me off because I'm like, I feel like we're just not watching the show for the same reason. And similarly enough, I think the people who watch the show and are, like, so pissed off at the girls who don't want to leave and aren't, like, super down for rescue, it feels really frustrating to me because it's, like, read into it a little bit. Think a little bit deeper. It's a very, very interesting representation of, like, what kind of life do some of them have to go back to? I think it's a really interesting commentary on how ostracized certain people feel in society, that they would rather be wild and free. And there's a quote from one of the creators or a writer from an interview from years ago where he was like, the adults, some of them are craving that freedom they had in the wilderness. Like, I think it's more like, is it kind of frustrating when you're watching it and you're like, why don't they want to go home? But to me, the fact that some of them don't want to go home just makes it that much more interesting. Like, what do you mean some of them don't want to go home? That's such a like fascinating concept, that for some people, going back is so unappealing because of the certain ways that they will not be free in society, where the chaos, the violence, the trauma goes hand in hand with the level of freedom that some of them maybe don't have out in the real world, they didn't have. So I think, like, I just don't really get mad at the characters even when they do things I don't agree with, because to me they're just so fascinating, and I think it's very, very interesting that they're doing things that I don't agree with. And again, I said this I think last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, but I think it's easy as a viewer to be like, they're so stupid, that doesn't make any sense. None of us, I don't think, have ever, if you're watching the show, have ever been stranded for 19 months with no food, resorting to, like,
like it's very easy from the comfort of our homes watching the show to be like, they should just go home. Like, why aren't they going home? They're so stupid for not going home. But when you're in that kind of, the kind of environment it's created, the kind of little community, their own form of a society that they've started, it's like not that simple. It's not that black and white. The whole show is gray. And I think some of them not wanting to go home, I mean, it's also like, why are you annoyed? Because it's like, you knew they were staying to winter. I guess like maybe people would prefer it if it was like the circumstances. I don't know. Anyways, like, oh, somehow Cody dies and then they can't find their way back is what people would prefer. But like, if you're watching the show that way, then like, why aren't, and I have seen some people say this take, but it's like, they've been here for over a year now. Shauna gave birth. Obviously there was a time where it was winter, but like, as soon as things cleared up, you couldn't have like, just started walking in the direction of the stream, eventually you'd reach something, right? Probably. It might take days and months and months and months, but if you walked far enough for a prolonged period of time, you'd probably reach something. Like, if you just kept walking, if they had been walking, like, every day for the last year that they've been here, they probably could have found something, I think. So it's like, if you're watching the show from that perspective of like, they're so stupid for not going home, why don't they want to go home? I feel like that's a big part of the show. It's like, clearly, I don't know. I need to not get annoyed with the discourse, but it's like, why are you mad that some of them don't want to go home? To me, the reasons they don't want to go home are so interesting and tell us about their character and also then give us insight into their adult counterparts. Like, the fact that Shauna doesn't want to go home is such a like important, like, what do you mean? That Thaisa, like, I'm jumping all around, but I'm not recapping it in a structured way. I assume you've seen the episode if you're listening to this. But, like, what do you mean Thaisa wants to stay? That's so interesting. It adds a layer to her character. Why are you mad at her instead of being like, wow, that's interesting? But anyways, sorry. Natalie has kind of taken over and she's like, okay, guys, everybody packing up for 6 days. We're going home. Lottie's like, we can't go home. And Natalie's like, why should we listen to you? And then Natalie instructs Mari to supervise Hannah and Cody as they bury Edwin. And as she's watching them bury Edwin, she goes to take a sip of her water bottle and then it turns into a Slurpee. And then that's kind of the beginning of a daydream-esque sequence where she has the Slurpee. Then we see Misty going to the bathroom and suddenly she's on a real toilet with real toilet paper. And then we see Van on a bed and Van is interrupted. But I thought this was really interesting in my mind. I don't think it's necessarily true. I think it was probably just like, but I don't know. I really liked the idea of them daydreaming about going home and like the real world and the way that they all connected. In my mind, I was hoping that Mari, and I am still hoping maybe it means something that they chose Mari to have this daydream. Maybe that means that she does survive because the other two people that we saw have a daydream were Misty and Van, who we know survived. So I don't know. I'm still in denial that we'll have another survivor. I don't know if it's going to happen at this point, but I really, really hope so. So that's where I stand. Ty interrupts Van's daydream and Ty is hesitant about going back. But the way that she's speaking and the way her face looks, to me, I immediately was like, I think that's other Ty. And then we see, like, Ty and the man with no eyes is right behind her. So I do think it's other Ty. But I think, as I was trying to say earlier, the people who don't want to go back, the reasons are really interesting. Ty's like, not much is going to change. Like, we're not going to be able to be together. And I think it's really interesting the way that Ty doesn't want to go home because of, there is something freeing about being out here with no societal expectations and systems in place that restrict you. Like, it's just, and I'm not saying like that we should all just like live in the wilderness and have no like society. Like, I'm not saying that, but I do think it's really, really interesting the fact that these specific characters, the ones that want to stay, are the ones who want to stay. And I think Ty is such an interesting one because I do think while other Ty is going to be and is a big reason for that, I think the logical reasons of like not wanting to, and we know that Ty and Van break up when they get back and that Ty like was closeted for a little while when she got back. Like, it's not like the ways that certain people, that the three main characters who say they want to stay are Shauna, Lottie, and Ty. The ways we know that the concerns or the reservations they had about going back, we know that that played a role for them. Like, that is something that happened. When Lottie gives her little speech later, which I'll get into in a second, like, all of those things, while obviously it's completely illogical to not go back to society and, like, suffer more and winter's coming so more people are gonna die and, like, all of those things, obviously, I completely understand. I'm not trying to be like, they should have stayed there, okay? But logically, it doesn't make sense. But on an emotional level, I understand the inclinations that certain of them have. Like, I get it. I get why Ty is, like, hesitant about going back. I do think there's meant to be some kind of, like, the wilderness. Maybe there's a supernatural aspect of the man with no eyes. Like, I do think maybe there's something like that. But even if there was no other Ty being hesitant at all, to me, is really interesting narratively. Like, I don't know. I think I just watch the show from a perspective of, like, even if I don't understand where they're coming from, and even if I wouldn't handle it that way, I try to have some kind of, I try to have compassion for the characters and, like, empathize with the positions they're in and try to understand their thought process, even if from a logical perspective with all of the distance and, like, bird's eye view of the whole narrative arc that I have. Obviously, logically, it's hard, like, they shouldn't stay. I get that. But I understand their desire to. And I think that's what makes the show so interesting. And I think that's what makes the adult timeline so interesting, is the way that some of them are still craving that, you know? And it's why I don't like, not the only reason, but it's part of the reason that Melissa's whole attitude bothered me, because it's like, you're not past it. You're still actively intertwined with this thing that happened to you out there by literally marrying Alex and having a child with her, like, lying to her about who you, like, what do you mean? You're very much intertwined with the wilderness and the trauma of that situation, even if you're acting like you're not. Anyways, not to go on my Melissa rant again, but it's just like, that's interesting to me that Ty wants to stay. Ty doesn't want to lose Van. So much of Ty's motivations are around losing Van. And they get back, and we don't know how that plays out. And I hope we eventually get to see it. But, like, they do break up. That doesn't... She does lose Van for a long period of time. And then when she gets Van back, Van's dying. Like, a lot of the fears many of them had... Like, Shauna. Shauna wants to stay. And I think the main reason Shauna wants to stay is because, like, some people are like, she doesn't have Jackie to go back to. And I think that's part of it. Like, obviously, she's dealt with, like, a great amount of loss out here that will be hard to face in the real world. I think Shauna just is a very, very different version of herself. I'm really interested in post-rescue, specifically for Shauna, because I'm interested to see on how she went back to Jeff, like, how that whole thing happened, because it feels very confusing with the version of Shauna we see now. I'm interested in on how she ended up with Jeff again. Does Shauna soften at all when she gets back? Because right now Shauna's, like, very angry. She's like, she has a very hard exterior, and she wasn't always like that. And I wonder if Shauna softens up a little bit. I don't know. I'm excited to see a Shauna post-rescue timeline. But anyways, what am I saying? Okay, Melissa and Shauna have a conversation. And this is part of the reason that Melissa's really confusing to me, because she's, like, all mad at Shauna about, like, Shauna abandoning her. And it's like, I don't understand Melissa's motivations. I don't get it. Does she like Shauna? Does she not? Did she genuinely think that by being with Shauna, she would, like, get a softer side of her? Like, I don't understand Melissa's motivations. And maybe there'll be an aha moment for me where I get it. Like, maybe it'll all click. Maybe there's just not enough there, because I felt like I said for a few episodes that I didn't fully understand Van. Like, some of Van's motivations were confusing to me. And I do think that I feel like I understand Van's character a little bit more. Melissa's still a mystery to me. And this specific conversation was confusing to me, because it's like, you literally got into a relationship with a girl who, like, beat Lottie to a bloody pulp. I was about to say bloody. To a bloody pulp. Bloody Lottie. To a bloody pulp. And literally the first time you kissed, she was threatening you with a knife, but like you get shot with an arrow and she wants to chase the person down. Like of all the things that Shauna did in Melissa's presence, if I was Melissa, that would be like, not the like least bad one, but it's like, is it bad that she left you when you were bleeding out? Like, yeah, I guess she could have died, but she didn't die. And Shauna was going after the guy. It's not like she just abandoned her because she didn't give a shit. She abandoned her because the group was chasing down these people who were like outsiders. Like to me, again, maybe I'm just like, whatever, but like, but this conversation, sorry, not to get onto a why I hate Melissa rant, but this conversation was really, really fascinating because Melissa was talking about all the things that she was excited to do when she got back and about how she was excited to live a normal life, like go to college, work a 9-to-5, have a normal life, which is why I think when people were so like, oh, Melissa got her normal life that she really wanted. And they liked that about adult Melissa. That pissed me off about adult Melissa because you're not living a normal life. You're married to Alex, who I do not need to keep going on and on and on about how not normal that is, quite literally at all. Which is why Melissa's motivation in the adult timeline, I'm like, I'm very confused about the two Melissas we see. They don't feel cohesive to me. I don't understand Melissa. Like, it doesn't feel like there is a through line in Melissa's character from the past to the present. I really don't like it, not gonna lie. But you can see that Shauna is very much not... Shauna clearly, like, she begins to dissociate. She sees the, like, wasps that she saw in the daydream that we saw at the beginning of the episode, or the dream at the beginning of the episode. And I thought that was really interesting because it kind of felt like... Because it felt like the episode opened with that little dream sequence, and then Shauna wakes up. Is Shauna having that dream? I don't know. That's how I read it. But it's possible that that's not the way it was intended. It was meant to be like, oh, this is like... But I don't know. Because it's just interesting to see Shauna, like, envisioning this thing that we saw adult Shauna have as part of the dream sequence. Like, I think that's really interesting. This, like, connection between the past and the present in that way that I thought was really interesting. Especially because the themes of the dream that I was talking about, and I think I talked about this yesterday when I've literally been trying to record this podcast episode for, like, a day now. But what was so interesting about that dream was that it was like, even if she was living a normal, boring life, the way that Melissa claims to be living, she won't escape the past. She won't. She works at a grocery store. She's scanning human body parts because she won't be able to escape that trauma. I thought it was interesting that when Melissa was talking about her normal, boring life, we see Shauna kind of tune out what Melissa's saying, and we see those, I imagine they're supposed to be yellow jackets, but they kind of look like moths. I don't know. I imagine they're supposed to be yellow jackets. I don't know. Maybe I made that up, but these bugs, whatever the fuck they are, and she sees them. I think that was really interesting and I really liked it. And Shauna, I think this is a big thing that changes things for Shauna. Not that I think Shauna was hesitant to go back, but I think the conversation of like how things will be when they go back, living a normal life, is so unappealing to Shauna because what normal life does she have to go back to? The version of herself that she became out here is just a completely new person. What is Shauna going to go back to? In different ways, but Ty is scared to go back because of the societal expectations and the limits she's going to have on her. Shauna similarly is hesitant to go back because of the societal expectations on her. Like, what will her life come to? She's just going to live a normal, boring life. And what happened to both of them? Ty did become closeted again. Shauna did end up just marrying Jeff and becoming a housewife and not living any of her dreams that she had wanted before. You know what I mean? And I think a big part of the relationship with Jeff and getting back into it and having a child, I think, was about trying to make everything that happened, because there was a lot of long-term impacts from her relationship with Jeff, as I've talked about many times. I think she went back to it to make it worth it. And she also probably felt some kind of comfort with Jeff. I don't really know. We'll see more how that plays out, but that's just my reading of Jeff and Shauna's relationship. Anyways, we see them packing to go home. Akilah goes to the place where all the animals are, and she imagines that they're all dead. And Lottie comes up to her and then suddenly they're alive again, and she's like, do you see this? Are they alive? And Lottie's like, did you see something? I do think Akilah is losing touch with reality. It's interesting because Akilah, she saw her little pet mouse, whose name I can't remember now. I'm so sorry to that mouse. She thought he was alive, and then he wasn't. Anyways, that was a really sad moment. I do think Akilah's losing touch with reality. And I think it's interesting because last season, I feel like it was more like a hunger thing. And this season, it's the caves. Like, it's definitely the caves are what's causing Akilah to lose touch with reality. But that was very sad. A scene I really, really loved. Nat goes to the plane. She puts Coach Ben's remains there. And she says goodbye to him the same way she did to Jackie. And I really loved this. Very few of them go back to the plane. I think Nat's the only one we see going back to the plane routinely. And I think there's just something really powerful about that. I think there's something really powerful then about when Natalie was dying, the dreams, as she was dying, she imagined herself on the plane. But as she's on the plane, she sees something and she talks to it, if you will. She's like, whatever the hell you are, we're leaving you out here. And I think, and maybe I'm wrong, and this is simply something that I made up, but Sophie Thatcher said in an interview that Natalie has a really interesting shift at the end of the season that she's excited to see people talk about. And in my delusional brain, I think the shift is that she's going to start to buy into the wilderness somehow. Like, I think last season, I talked a little bit about Natalie's relationship to the wilderness throughout this podcast. Not like this episode, but like during my coverage of the season, because Natalie in season two was very much like, this is all bullshit. And I think when she took on a leadership role and after Javi died, I think she kind of started understanding the purpose it had in rationalizing the horrible things they were doing and the way it was allowing them to survive. Because if you're doing something horrible, but you believe you're doing it in the name, or like, it chose. She didn't let Javi die. It chose. That like allows you to do something horrible that you need to survive. You know what I mean? So I think she started to see the value in it. She didn't immediately shut Lottie down when Akilah was like, he's our bridge home. Like, she allowed this hope to carry them through. I think we've seen this, and I hope that it's leading to like a shift where she fully like somewhat buys into it in an interesting way. That's my interpretation of what Sophie Thatcher said based off of these little shifts that we're seeing. I think there's going to be a big shift. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see how the season plays out. Am I hoping this partially because I'm a Lottie Knapp truther? Yes. And speaking of Lottie Knapp, they're getting ready to leave and Lottie says she's staying. Nat goes up to her and she's like, Lottie, I know it's scary. We have to go back. She tries to like convince her. And Lottie gives a really, really moving speech. I was tearing up. It still gives me chills to think about how she will not be well. She doesn't have, like, there's no home to go back to. And then she says, Natalie, what home do you have to go back to? And it's like, she's trying to connect with Natalie and be like, again, in the ways Ty has all of these reasons for not wanting to go back because of the societal expectations. Shauna as well. Lottie, I can't blame them for being hesitant about going back because in many ways, the things that they were afraid of did occur. And is it a self-fulfilling prophecy? Maybe. Did Ty have to be closeted again? Like, did Ty have to go into the closet? Maybe not. Like, maybe all of these things weren't things they had to end up doing, but they, whatever. I mean, Lottie's wasn't really her choice. Like, they institutionalized her against her will. But this whole speech where she's talking about how she won't be well, she was right. Like, I can't be mad at Lottie because she was right. And each of these characters in their own way showcase what it's like to be marginalized in some capacity. Lottie doesn't want to go back because she will be ostracized. She will be isolated. She'll be institutionalized. She knew that was going to happen. And all of these things, to me, add to my view of Lottie and confirm to me that I understand Lottie. And obviously other people can have their readings of Lottie, but the more the season progresses, the more I'm like, I really do feel like I understand Lottie and I am confident in my reading of her. Because I do think Lottie starting the community she did, becoming a cult leader, I've seen people say on the internet that Lottie is narcissistic and Lottie's this, that, and the other. And like, I'm not here to diagnose her. I'm not a psychological professional. I don't think it's helpful to diagnose characters with things like that because a lot of people like don't actually know what narcissism is. Like, I could not properly diagnose a narcissist. I'm not a mental health professional. And even if I was, I think, anyways, but a lot of the ways people talk about Lottie and her motivations, it never clicked for me. And I do think the more the season progresses, the more I feel comfortable, the more I feel validated in my reading of Lottie. Lottie's motivations to me, the fact that she was institutionalized for as long as she was, that to me, I think gives more insight into why she started a cult than some kind of like personality trait that was like inherent to Lottie's character that she like, that's my reading of Lottie. And I think this episode, the way she was like, I'm not going to be well. And the fact that she wanted to stay, it makes sense that she went back to that. Because she's right. She goes back and what do? They lock her up. She loses everything good that she had out there. All of these characters wanting to stay to me was so interesting because the reasons they want to stay feel very real. And I understand, like there's a Taylor Swift lyric that's like, before I learned civility, I used to scream ferociously. And that lyric always makes me think of Yellow Jackets because there is like a level of like when you let go of all of the societal pressures, all the social constructs, all of these restrictions on who you are, there is a level of freedom. When there are social norms that oppress and restrict people, it's not that confusing to me that those people are maybe craving the freedom that they get outside of that societal environment where they're restricted and they're oppressed and they're marginalized for parts of themselves. I think the fact that they want to stay is so important narratively and so interesting. Specifically the three characters that do say they want to stay. But anyways, Lottie says she's staying. She gives her little speech. And Natalie's like, after Lottie says the thing, like, what home do you have to go back to? Natalie kind of leaves. And she's like, you know what? Fine, Lottie, you can stay. And then Shauna's like, I'm staying. And Natalie's like, what the fuck, Shauna? What are you doing? And Lottie's like, do you hear it? And Shauna's like, it just doesn't feel right. Like, she's like, I'm not staying because of you or it. It just doesn't feel right. I'm not going home. And then Ty's like, I'm not going home. And eventually Natalie's like, fine, you guys stay here. We're leaving. And Shauna's like, no, none of you are leaving. And that's where the episode ends. So I'm excited to see. I think it picks up where, well, that's not where the episode ends because after this, then we saw Shauna biting Hillary Swank. Like the thing is, maybe this is just me, but Hillary Swank to me is just Hillary Swank. And I'm not saying she's not a good actress. It's just like, I don't feel the through line. So right now in my mind, she's not Melissa. I'm glad that she has another name. I'm going to call her Kelly or whatever her name is because she doesn't feel like Melissa to me. But anyways, the episode ends with Shauna biting Kelly's arm. I do think I honestly have no idea. I have no predictions for the way they end up staying. Like, does Shauna just kill the guy? I don't know. I'm really interested to see on how it ends up happening that they do stay, because we know they stay until at least the winter. And Sophie and Elise already said that she didn't like do it on purpose, but she was like, I'm interested to see how, like, season three ends on a cliffhanger. She said something about like season four and them being rescued, like she hopes like at least halfway through the season or something. I don't know. She, like, basically she said that there's no rescue plot this season. I don't even know. Because I don't think Sophie and Elise, maybe I'm wrong, but she doesn't give the vibe to me that she's like really reading what people are saying about this. So I don't think she knows that there is a theory that they get rescued at the end of the season and people have been theorizing like, oh, they get rescued. So her saying that kind of like confirms something. I think she thinks that she's probably like, there's no way they think that we're getting rescued yet. But people have been like, they're getting rescued. Now I know they're not getting rescued because what Sophie and Elise said, but I don't really know how the rest of the season is going to play out. Like, I'm really, really interested. I don't have any predictions, except I do hope that there is a shift in that. And I hope she and Lottie kiss. Will it happen? No. Maybe. But at the very least, I really loved this. We got a good amount of Lottie Nat in these last few episodes. I really loved the scene of Nat trying to get Lottie to stay and having compassion for her. And then eventually she gives up on her, but like there's a care that Nat has for Lottie and that Lottie has for that. There's a care they have for each other that is beautiful to me. I love them individually and I love their dynamic because of how different they are and yet similar in a way that I really, really love. So I love them. More Lottie Nat, that's all I can ask for. Nobody's dead yet. Like, nobody's dead yet. I thought like five people were gonna die this season and we have two episodes left and nobody, like, so far, the only people who have died are Lottie and Ben. More people have to die in the teen timeline. Like, I feel like Akilah's got to die in episode 9. I mean, I don't want Akilah to die, but, like, somebody's going to die in episode 9. Because if not, what? They all die in episode 10? That's a lot of people to kill off in episode 10. I say a lot of people. They never confirmed a number. I made it all up. So I don't know. I hope Jeff dies next episode. Walter's been gone for a couple episodes. Maybe he's going to die. I like Walter, but I do think Jeff will die by the end of the season. And I also think Van will die by the end of the season in the adult timeline. I don't know who's going to die in the teen timeline because right now it feels like nobody. but probably Cody soon. Because I feel like they have to kill him. I feel like there's no way they keep him around for a long time and somebody doesn't try to have him guide them to rescue. You know what I mean? Like, if they don't kill him, then why wouldn't Travis sneak off with him and try to get home? Like, I think there's... He's got to die because he's their actual bridge home. He's the only one who knows how to get the fuck out of there. So I do think he's going to die soon. But besides that, I don't know. More people have got to die. At this point, I'm like, I'm just excited to see where it goes because I genuinely don't know where it's going to go. But thank you so much for tuning in. It means a lot. If you enjoyed the episode, please follow me wherever you listen to podcasts. If you've listened to a few episodes and you would like to leave a review, that would be nice. If you're listening to this on YouTube, make sure to subscribe so you can get notified. I am going to upload the audios onto YouTube the same day now going forward. I was super behind, but I've caught up. So this episode should be out the same Wednesday that it goes live on other platforms and next week as well. Thanks so much. Hope you have a great week. You'll hear from me next Wednesday with my thoughts on episode 9 of season 3 of Yellow Jackets and any other shows that I have things to say about. Have a great week. Sorry if this episode was all over the place. Buzz, buzz, buzz.